master has all these, he has two thoughts that he really wants us to understand through this chapter. The first is really, what is the nature of error, which is what I've been talking about. And the second is the right attitudes to have when you have mistakes. And he really does talk about it at length, and when we go into the chapter in karma, we talk about it more. You can't really escape just by affirmation. You know, wrong action has energy, and then that energy has to be countered one way or another. And he attacks very directly, you know, many cherished traditions that you're saved by the blood of Jesus Christ. And so he says, produce a quart, you know? Like, what an answer. Like, and he really mocks this idea, this presumptuous idea, which Swami talks about how presumptuous it is to simply to declare that I am saved. He said, you may declare that you wish to follow Jesus Christ, but it's really Jesus Christ who's going to say whether you're saved or not. It's not really, we don't have the capacity to save ourselves, and they're merely our declaration that we are. And he attacks also this question of what is the power of confession, which is a very interesting one. Doesn't it help, he said, to confess your sins to someone? And Master says, don't ever tell. It's good in the sense to acknowledge your own limitations. But he said, you must tell your story to people of wisdom who can really help you. Otherwise, you're in danger of getting bad advice. And then he goes against that whole extraordinarily loved Catholic tradition that you can be absolved of your sins by simply doing what the priest says. And he raises that question. He said, to absolve you of your sin, in that sense, is to change your karma. He said, and if you get an upset stomach, can the priest sort of have you do four Hail Marys and will your upset stomach be gone? Because you've put out a certain action that has created a certain negative result, and there must be a corresponding action. And you see how all of these things just get so institutionalized. And what Master is also attacking here, which we talk about in this chapter, is the difference between churchianity and Christianity. You know, Jesus talked about sin, but he also talked about a loving God, and he talked about karma, he talked about these laws of life, but he also talked about how you can free yourself from them is by this inner relationship with the Spirit. So what I always say to people is you've got to think, as I was starting to say, you have two realities when you make an error. One is the error that you've made, and the other is the attitude you hold toward what you have done, which determines how quickly you get back on your feet again. And sometimes the mistakes people make are really not that much of a problem, but the attitude they hold toward the mistakes they have made become a very large problem in their lives. You know, and you have to appreciate that if you ever want to be free of the downward-pulling mental attitudes that you have right now, and in many cases we were born with certain things, certain insecurities, certain profound misunderstandings, or we were born into karmic circumstances that seem to aggravate or bring out of us certain attitudes. I know I realized some certain things about my upbringing seem so peculiar to me. When I think of it from my soul's point of view, I said to myself once, why were you born into a family that in so many ways exacerbated some of your worst qualities? And it just seems so odd. Why would I have done that? But then it occurred to me very simply, because it made them so bad that I noticed. Right? And so sometimes what we think of as bad karma, which is being in circumstances, being born or put in circumstances that really upset us, is often really our good karma, because it, as just as what I'm saying, it really brings it to the surface, whereas otherwise it might have just been lain dormant. I recall I had this very difficult relationship with a person at Ananda Village for many years, and I really thought I had overcome it. What had actually happened is I didn't have to be near them anymore. And distance makes the heart grow fonder, so I thought that I was feeling kindly. Circumstances brought me into close proximity with that person again, and in a matter of about one day, I was pretty much right back to where I'd ever been, which I found extremely discouraging. So discouraging that I was actually weeping over it. And I was in the car with Swami Kriyananda when I was weeping. And I was just saying, I thought I'd overcome this. I really thought I was free of it. And he said, well, it's a good thing to know you're not, because you weren't putting out any effort anymore, were you? We were just cruising on the belief that everything was fine, but it wasn't fine at all. It was just lying dormant, waiting to ambush you. You see, instead of, and Swamiji is so masterful, and so is Master himself, instead of hitting us when we're down, so often we all make the mistake of when somebody begins to reveal to us a certain weakness, then we say, yes, and here's more. Instead of realizing that that's the worst moment in which to affirm weakness, when a person is already becoming vulnerable, that's the time to encourage them and make them think, you can do it, you can overcome this. And so Swamiji was acting in his usual manner by saying, well, encouraging me to be able to overcome it, but also let's look at the bright side. And that's just a habit. That's a habit of wisdom, not of sin and ignorance. A habit of wisdom is, all right, doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if I have murdered or committed suicide or stolen or ruined my life or ruined everybody's life. All you've done is done it. That's all. You haven't in any way corrupted or changed the divinity of your true nature. Do you see the difference? We feel like we have, but we haven't. We've simply behaved badly. And as Sri Yukteswar said, the past lives of all men are dark with many shames. That's a wonderful expression that we often say to one another in times of trial, either seriously or jokingly. When you just have messed up, you just say, well, the past lives of all men are dark with many shames, meaning, no big deal, folks, this is just the way it is. You know, why did I think I would be the sole exception, that no ignorance would touch my life? But developing a deep and profound appreciation, I am a child of the infinite. God loves me for my inner nature, and all I have to do is get this mud off of me. And if we fall in the mud, as Master writes here also, if you have something that's gold and you cover it with a cloth, no matter how thick that cloth, you never really affect the gold. You merely hide it. And so we should meditate on the inner reality of ourselves as this bright golden light. And even if we have made the glass in front of it opaque by our own continuous stupidity, it doesn't have anything to do with us. It's just something that has happened. And so we just pick ourselves up and just go right forward again. Swami tells a very inspiring story about a woman at Mount Washington, the ashram, of course, where Yogananda lived. And this woman had been a monastic there, and against Yogananda's advice, she left the monastic life and got married. He told her not to, but she did. She went out, she got married, she had a child. As Master anticipated, the marriage was a disaster. After a while, when the child was old enough, she just picked up and came back to the ashram and just brought her child with her. And one of the other more narrow-minded sisters said, how dare you, come back like this after you disregarded the Master's advice? And the woman, who had a lot of spunk, said, what do you want me to do, worship my mistake for the rest of my life? It's a perfect answer, isn't it? And we have to be very careful, this concept of what's at the center of your altar. You know, what are you really worshiping? Because sometimes what we do is we actually enshrine our errors, and that's what we worship. Worship in the sense that all our devotion and attention circles around it. You know, I have made a mistake. It's just a kind of egotism to do that. I've shared with you before the story of my friend who did something very thoughtless and actually caused Swami Kriyananda a considerable amount of inconvenience and embarrassment just because of her actions. It wasn't that serious, but it was just one of those bonehead things that people do. And about 4 or 5 days later, she was moping about, and Swami sort of noticed her bad mood, and he said, why are you so down? Oh, she said, I just feel so badly about what happened. And his answer was, what egotism. And she was a little shocked because she was feeling about an inch high, and it just was not, the concept of egotism was not like the first thought that would occur to her. Worm was more what she felt like. And then he explained it like this. He sort of got her attention and all of us who heard it with that remark. He said, what you're really saying is that the fact that you made a mistake is so shocking to you that even days later you just have to keep replaying it. Do you see? He said, but in fact, we all make mistakes. And it only an egotist Only someone who had such an inflated opinion of themselves would be so shocked by the realization that you're not perfect. Do you see? It's humility is not just to make yourself feel low, it's to see yourself honestly. Because she was making such an exaggerated thing out of her action that in fact it was egotism. It was all about look at me. It wasn't look at me, I'm so great. It was look at me, I'm so terrible. But it was still just pulling the harmonious pattern of life off to one side with excessive self-concern, do you see? Instead you say, of course I'm a bonehead, we're all boneheads. You know, of course I made a stupid mistake and of course I regret it. I asked Swamiji once, well, how do you deal? What is the right attitude toward your own personal failures? He said, when it happens, look right at it, accept responsibility, try to understand as much as you can about what happened and why in the moment, he said, and then forget it and never think about it again. That's very powerful. He said, make no attempt to rationalize, justify, or excuse yourself. Just take it full on, try to understand it, but then let it go. I've also found, too, that anything that you really need to know, it'll come to you. In fact, the more quickly you can forget it, the more clearly you will perceive things. Because as long as you're obsessed about it, you're out of proportion. You're down in the dumps and you can't see it. So you just have to constantly, I am a golden child that every so often falls in the mud. Really work on that. Above all things, you'll find it will free you more than anything. And then when death comes and you have to look back over the whole thing, you just laugh at it, you know. Master says in here, give what you do to God, give him the good things, but also give him the bad things. I'm just your child, I'm just struggling along out here. Of course these things happen, it's all your play. Everything that happens is your play. It's your energy that I'm using, and if I use it wrongly, there we are, and if I use it good, fine. But it's just a play. It just comes and goes. You know, help me to be better. Make that prayer. Do you understand? Do you see how important it is? Because then when we die, you know, you're just lying there on your deathbed. You want to remember the joy of it. You want to go out with a sense of joy, not with a sense of worry. It's a huge thing because your consciousness just gets so diminished. You have no way of distracting yourself from your essential self. Stephen Levine, I mean, death is an important part of all of this because the pattern of each incarnation is set. You know, this is the law of karma and reincarnation. We'll deal with karma tonight and reincarnation next time. But we don't get out of these things. It just goes on and on and on. I was talking about this. Where was I talking about? It doesn't make any difference, but somewhere. Oh, I think it was at the retreat. About this exercise that Stephen Levine recommended about in seminars that he did for people who had terminal illnesses who were facing what they would consider to be premature death and helping them conceivably to become cured by working with the inner realities that were causing the illness. And so he would have people make a list of everything that they were going to be disappointed because they weren't going to get to experience because they were going to die. You know, if you die early, you might not see the wedding of your children, you won't see grandchildren, you won't grow old with your spouse, you may never go to Europe, you know, all the list of things. And people in the seminars would write out these things and weep over each of these losses. And there would be the automatic thought, you know, that I have to work out all of these things and this will make me better if I get over these disappointments. And it doesn't hurt to try to get over those disappointments because they do haunt you lifetime after lifetime. But then the second half of it was to make a list of all the reasons why you're relieved to be dying early because now you never have to go to the trouble of leaving your spouse. You're just going to be able to die and get out from under it, you know, or your poor drug-addicted son that you haven't known what to do about. You're not going to have to try to solve that problem and you're not going to have to really find a meaningful career because you're going to be dead, you know, just all these simple things. The interesting exercise when I was starting, I tried to do that just for fun, is that because of my belief in karma and my belief in the continuation of consciousness, there's nothing you can get out of. You might get out of the exact circumstances of being married to this person or that job or these bills. You might not owe the same debt to the same bank. But whatever consciousness brought you to that, merely shedding your body doesn't touch it. It's just who you are, and eventually you're going to have to face it. Whatever confusion there was, you're just eventually going to have to face it. And it's very freeing, in a sense, to think like that, because then also, when errors come, you say, great, let's go ahead and work it out. I always think of it like this. The number of times I'm going to make mistakes is finite, whereas the lifespan is infinite. The consciousness is infinite, error is finite. Do you see what I mean? And so no matter how many millions of errors I'm going to make, someday I'm going to make the last one. And so there's always the satisfaction of checking one more off the list. And even if it's bazillions of times you're going to do this, you're going to do it one less time because you just did it. And someday it'll be over. And so then what is the big deal about it? You become more light and more free about these things. Our friend Linda Gerber, who many of you know, she's had cancer now for 3 years, almost exactly, and she's probably going to die within the next few weeks. I have to write a letter and tell people that. And she's my age, 55. Has lived a charmed life, a wonderful husband, beautiful children, and beautiful home, everything. Now she's just... But she's so happy. She was telling me, when everything's get too much, I just look into the light. And she says, I wake up in the night just laughing. She doesn't even know why, but just because she's a very good person. And she just has allowed herself to focus on what's good. I mean, she's dying now, but she's just going out with so much sweetness. And, you know, she's struggled in her life. Everyone does. But she's done a very good job of just now remembering what's good. And that's how you really want to be, but you won't be that way unless you practice when it's easier. If you have a habit of dwelling on negativity, you'll die and be born with it again. What a drag! You know? Just think about it. God, it's bad enough that I'm doing this now. Do I want to do this again and again and again? That's a tremendous incentive. That's what I was meaning about Stephen Levine. When, you know, you're dying, you just think, oh, Lordy, I don't want to face this again. I don't want to be this mean, small-minded person and still be angry at him or her. Once in our community, and these things happen in a community, a marriage broke up because one of the partners, the man, was interested in another woman. And it was a long saga, and it finally, you know, karma had to be accepted, and the original marriage broke up, and the second relationship started. Days after that happened, Swami invited both women over to his house to part of a celebration to cook dinner. And of course, because we're all friends, it was like, and someone said, like he didn't know, sir, excuse me, do you realize what you're doing there? He said, of course I realize it. He said, they're going to have to face it sooner or later, better that they start right now. You know, why wait to future lifetimes when you don't even remember? And you just sort of have this irrational hatred for this person and nobody can understand why. Everybody else thinks they're so nice and you wish to choke them every time you see them. Right? Just face it. Sooner or later, it's all the fingers of one hand. You're just not going to be able to hold it because it's not true. It's an error. It's based on ignorance and then you behave badly. We have to become unrelenting about this. It's one of the things that really makes a devotee is when you finally just say, I don't really care about the details anymore. And God is so subtle with this, and I often tease people. They'll come to me, and I mean, I watch myself. This is how come I know this. Believe me, I include myself in this. They'll come, and somebody really has messed up. And they really are right. You know, really right. And I say it's always so subtle when you really are right, you know? But even then, you just, what good does it do to be right? It's still ignorance. Even if all the facts are on your side, the truth is not. If the end result of that is that you feel the right to dominate someone and be angry at them and separate yourself from them, you're acting from ignorance, period. And a lot of times you're right. Those are the very subtle tests. Because then you have to relinquish all that attachment to being right and just recognize, doesn't matter if I'm right. My consciousness is off, therefore I'm wrong. This is very simple. And when you really get down to that, life gets so much easier because you just don't have to spend all this time examining everybody else. You just, doesn't matter what everybody else is doing. It's all just a setup to show you your errors. And the only job you have is to endeavor to get back to the law of life, which is joy. Is it easy? Oh my God, no. Can you do it quickly? Absolutely not. Can you just merrily affirm your way out of it? No. Why? Because of the law of karma. which we'll talk about in a few moments, because there's a lot of energy involved here, but at least fight the right battle instead of fighting the battle of justification, self-justification. Swamiji once, someone wanted to talk to him about something, and they said they needed about an hour. And Swami said, ooh, that makes me uneasy. He said, you can get at the truth in a few minutes, but self-justification takes a long time. It was such a perfect answer. And in the circumstances, we all knew that was exactly why the man needed an hour, because he needed to make sure that he could establish that he was right. You know, why? It's just ignorance. It's not you. Just let it go. Or at least work at letting it go. And if you can't really work at letting it go, pray to be able to let it go. And or at least pray to want to be able to let it go. You know, I had a very interesting experience. Extremely interesting. I'd been struggling with certain wrong attitudes, all having to do with personal relationships mostly. You know, you don't really know what you've done to each other in the past. And you can be certain that if somebody is mistreating you, it's because you mistreated them. There's really like, that is a no-brainer. Right? They're not just going to come and be, and they could be horrible to you, but they're just, it's just a karmic ping pong game that you're playing, that's all. And you can, you know, have psychic visions and horoscopes and readings and figure out all these things, but it doesn't matter, it's just tit for tat. You were horrible to them, they were horrible to you. And you're born with all of this. I mean, think of, I don't mean to be really gruesome, but you know, think of children who are murdered by horrible people and how the mother feels about the murderer. When everybody dies and you meet each other again, and really bad things happen, or just profound disappointments, husbands or wives who disappoint you or betray you. Or I was meditating once in seclusion, and it was so graphic to me. I was having a very wonderful seclusion, but I got to this certain point in my meditation where it was almost like I could feel like there was this hard shield, and I could feel that underneath that shield was all the anger, frustration, disappointment, and pain of all my incarnations. You know, just the accumulated suffering of lifetimes that I was still determined to have. You know, I was just determined to remember it. Remember the bad things that happened to me. And I could just see it was just like having an anvil on my head. Just the capacity of my spirit to rise was exactly proportional to my willingness to just let all that stuff go. I had defined myself by it. I am suffering. Instead of suffering has happened, let it pass. You know, bad things have happened, let them pass. It can't be overemphasized how important it is. Any questions or comments or thoughts? I might scoot on to the next chapter. What comes after sin is ignorance, as you can see, we sort of start moving right into. Yes, Duncan?
Would you feel that anger on you?
Pardon me?
Would you feel that weight on you, or that anger, if you don't realize at that moment?